That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
What? That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have Angus O'Brien on the podcast to not only celebrate Boots on Netflix, the incredible new show that I'm just obsessed with, but also celebrate that Halloween is over. It's been a long week. If you know, you know. We do not talk about Halloween in this interview, but I do talk about it with Peru Flores over on Substack, which you can access right meow, linked in the description. But please, in the meantime, enjoy this very horny, vulnerable, delicious conversation with Angus O'Brien. Angus, listen the brunch up. I am Hello. So obsessed with Boots, and I'm so obsessed with you, and I'm so glad you're here on this gay-ass podcast, and thank you for coming with a club red lighting. Did you bring slutty lighting on purpose?
Yeah, I wanted to just make sure it was extra gay for you today, so I zhuzhed up the hue bulbs to their maximum gay potential.
Zhuzh the hue, babe. You also are giving us, for anybody who's listening and not watching, we have a cut off blue tee. It says filth on it. I wore a white sort of military tank in homage to Boots. So why does it say filth, Angus? Are you a filthy queen?
I would say, yeah, I'm a filthy queen. I would say it's also... I wanted to give homage to my sort of filthy, dirty character in the show as well.
It's so well done, Angus. Well, and I have to say that you do so many things well in the show, but also off the show. In fact, as a hard-hitting gay journalist, your Instagram bio, I will be bringing up, it says, "I always have a place at the Dairy Queen."
Yes.
And Angus O'Brien, that is a quote from a movie that turned me into the homosexual you see today. Angus, tell the girls what the movie is and why is that quote in your bio?
It's Parker Posey in Waiting for Guffman. And Parker Posey is to me like the everything influence. And so I just had to throw a little something up there for her.
It's such a great reference. I mean, that movie. So I'm from Missouri originally. The fact that that movie takes place in Blaine, Missouri, which I do think is made up. But I don't know. When was your first time seeing Waiting for Guffman? What does the movie mean to you? Why do you love it?
I would say I found that movie through a sort of Parker Posey rabbit hole that I was in. Party Girl is one of my favorite movies of all time. It feels like so New York. And so I watched that movie for the first time when I was in my mid-20s. And I just, there's so many things I love about it. And then I was kind of like, I got obsessed with Parker Posey. And I will say, like, a lot of my inspirations as an actor are just like from women. Like, obviously, that's like the classic gay experience. It's going to be these like iconic women. And so that movie I sort of found on the rabbit hole of my Parker Posey journey.
Oh my God. A Parker Posey journey is something that every gay guy should go on. I remember I was maybe in eighth grade. No joke, but this gay story is very real. I was in like the theater classroom of my high school and a girl brought in Waiting for Guffman. She played it on the VHS and I watched it for first time, deeply closeted, but just felt so obsessed with her, with... obviously, Corky St. Clair, obviously, Catherine O'Hara. I think Parker Posey's audition scene, "Teacher, teacher, I love you." Whoa! Everything about it is just, something that puts fuel into our gay fire. But
it really does.
Since I'm getting into now sort of Angus Herstory, where were you growing up? And then after I hear from that, I will ask you the gay ass pod question. But where did Angus sort of begin his gay ass journey?
I grew up, my gay ass journey began in Los Angeles. And I am raised in Los Angeles, born in New York, and then moved to LA when I was still too young to remember. So LA is my hometown.
Sure. Is that because your parents are Hollywood weirdos? Or
So my mom did soaps before I was born. And then she had me and my brother and retired. But so she was with my dad. We lived in Vermont for like a very brief period. My mom and dad got divorced. And then they both moved to LA like kind of separately. And yeah, that was it, really. I mean, my mom didn't really, at that point, I don't think she was working. I don't think she was doing soaps anymore, but she was just like, I want to go to LA. So that's where we were.
And then you said, Mama, I want to be on the screen as well. And then yes. You went to NYU.
Yes.
You studied at Adler, am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm an Atlantic King myself.
No
so
way.
We can trauma bond there. But since you are here on this gay ass podcast and you're already giving us nuggets of beautiful parts of your lore, I'm going to ask you the gay ass podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do okay. we blame even, babe?
I love this question. And there were so many things that come to mind. But I'm going to say the first thing that came to mind, which is specifically the costume design in Batman Forever. And particularly Chris O'Donnell in Batman Forever. There was no need for them to do everything that they did, but they did it anyways.
Girl, they did it. And let's just say, we'll address the perky elephant in the room, which is the nipples. It's the nipples.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Someone took the time to design the indentations of the nipples and the bulge. I'm just like, there was a gay person, like, had to be cooking.
No, there was. The people listening are gonna know his name. Unfortunately, it's escaping me. But it was a very gay BTS for that movie. And I think we always have to shout them out. Because Chris O'Donnell, I think it's partly, like, the nipples, the bulge, sure. But also, like, they put some sort of gloss on his lips.
Okay, you're taking all the words out of my mouth. Yes.
Well, I love to go lip locked with you, Angus, because I picture just grabbing him by the face, pulling him in, and then just like feeling the glossiness of the lips. And of course, I would picture my hands roaming elsewhere, but I don't know. What do you think? What do you think Chris O'Donnell feels about so many gay guys lusting over him? Do you think he likes it?
I feel like he's probably, like, especially since that's so, that's such an early reference point for him in his career, that he's probably, like, he's probably pumped that he has such a established sex symbol moment when he was younger. And also just, like, going back to what I find so erotic about the whole situation is just, like, it's the juxtaposition of this really kind of carved out, like, physique with this like very pretty boy soft face moment happening.
Very,
and I just
well
love
said.
That. Yeah.
Well, we're obviously going to get into the boots of it all, but before we do so, I just want to say that something about this show that I think mirrors you, Angus, that's really interesting is the cross between like masculinity, sort of heteronormativity, and embracing our queerness and what makes us not a part of quote unquote mainstream society.
Yes.
And so while I think Boots does such a great job of showing us that tension, I feel like you, Angus O'Brien, have this past and present of, like, you've written about being a cis straight presenting dude with pretty masculine qualities, but you're also a gay guy. Were you, when you were growing up, were you someone that was able to sort of like pass, as it were? Did you have any faggy tendencies? Like, what was it like? And did you come out earlier or later because of that?
So I came out in high school because I didn't even really understand my sexuality until high school. I feel like it's honestly hard to remember looking back. I don't feel like I was ever particularly masculine, you know, when I was younger. I think I just sort of seemed like this down the middle, regular, like insecure middle schooler. But I feel like it wasn't until, so I came out in high school, was very fortunate. Like, my family's very liberal. It's no problem there. And then I kind of like, it actually, surprisingly, it wasn't the acting school that was the incubator for my more like gayer tendencies, but it was this other class. I took this academic class that was like a performance and politics like academic sort of class.
Yeah.
But in the class, it was like, it was my first time being in a small classroom with like all different kinds of people, like gay people, queer people, lesbians, trans people, like, and everyone got an opportunity to speak each class. And it was my first sort of regular exposure to like people beyond just gay people similar to myself.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like it was so much cooler than just like the gay people in my life. And and I feel like then is like I feel like gayness at its best when we're adopting our more feminine qualities, it's because we have like a reverence for women. Like, I think obviously there are plenty of things gay people do that are not like super celebratory of women, but I hope that we can aspire to like emulating and celebrating women more.
I love that. I don't often think about like how we embrace femininity because it is an homage to the women that sort of we idolize. Because I think there is a whole conversation in the gay community about like, you know, being too femme or again, passing as like mask. And I think that it's true that like the more that we can embrace the feminine side of us, I think that it just is the more free we feel, because it really is annoying and just exhausting to like try to just like be a dude. Like, I think that's probably why watching Boots is sort of triggering in a way that I know it's meant to be, because it's just like so macho.
Yeah.
I think that I found it hard to watch at times, again, because it was meant to be hard to watch, because it's so like, it's all about being masculine and strong, but of course feeling desperately out of place while still wanting to belong. So it sounds like you sort of maybe never felt out of place, but it took this class for you to feel like, oh, there's a lot more than just my experience.
Yeah, I think I was just like, there is a route of the gay guy experience, which is just like, I have to be a specific kind of way and I have to look a specific kind of way and act a specific kind of way. And it is like, I don't know, if you can free yourself from that, like, it's just more fun, I think. It's more...
Yeah, wait, what is the queeniest quality of you? Again, because I love how you're able to play these roles that have such, like, a dude strength in them. But I want to know, outside of the off-cam, Angus O'Brien, what's your queeniest quality?
My queeniest quality is probably that I am, like, obsessed with being 5'9", because I love when a guy is taller than me.
Oh!
I always joke with my boyfriend, who is, I'm sorry to brag, like taller than 6 feet tall.
Ah! So, how tall is he?
Like 6'2", I think.
Ah, that's what I am too. Not to fucking brag, but I'm 6'2" as well.
Congratulations.
So,
okay, but I will say, like, I always joke with him that is like, there exists in me this fantasy of being like a 2000s brunette actress that like is just like leaning into like a taller man, and I just I'm obsessed with that. I'm obsessed with that feeling. About,
it's almost like you want to be held up, like you're a damsel in distress. Your long hair cascades down his nipples. We'll say it, and I don't know. Is it just because like you enjoy feeling? Sub, is it a subby thing? Is it like you're like it's hard to hold up the world at times and you just want to be held?
I think it's like a combination of just like the physical sensation is so relaxing to me, and also there is something about like the unique experience of being a gay person who loves that, where it's like, I know that I am like a heavy, dense person, but I like the fantasy of feeling like light and like,
well, think about smaller. It's like powerful businessmen in suits go to doms
and
get the shit whipped out of them because they're tired of whatever. If I'm being honest with you, at 6'2", I used to not enjoy being around men who were taller than me. It made me feel like uneasy.
Really?
Yeah, because I truly have not unpacked why. Like, I remember in college, there's a guy, he's actually a very successful set designer. His name is Jason Sherwood. We shout him out.
Shout
Jason
out.
Sherwood is like 6'5" or something. And I remember every time I was around him, I was like, I'm nervous. I'm nervous. And it wasn't until I hooked up with a guy that was, you know, 6'3", 6'4", and I really enjoyed it, that I was like, wait a minute, there's something to this being shorter than somebody. Yes. And now I'm like fully, I've been radicalized by taller men. I think it really, there is something to being held. There's something to looking up at somebody. Oh my God. Putting your hands on shoulders that are taller than yours. Wow. What a feeling. Yes, what an experience.
You're speaking my language. It's everything. Yes. But I will say, like, I actually just recently had an experience where, again, this is like what's so fun about being gay is like I was in a situation out. I went out in LA with my friend and we went to Hot Dog Sunday. And there was this guy that was like 5 foot, like 6 maybe. And I was like loving that moment of having that experience of being the 6 foot plus person when we were dancing together.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're going to play it straight here. And I'll tell you, I do love a short king. When I have the strength to throw someone over my shoulder, I will. Since we're talking about stature for a second, I would love some advice from you. Listeners know, people who follow me know that I'm trying to grow tits. You have talked about an amazing experience, an amazing journey of getting sober. And in your sobriety, you've put on a bunch of weight, sort of gaining mass in your fitness journey. Tell me, Angus, if I want to grow tits, what should I be eating and how do I get there?
Okay, so I have like the boring-ish answer, which is that I used to do personal training before I was an actor.
Smart.
So I just feel like I know how to train for myself in a way that works. But in general, this is what I say to people is like in the gym, well, obviously eating is a huge part of it. You need to make sure you're eating enough. But in the gym, the intensity should be high. Like, and what I mean by that is when you're doing a set, by the end of it, it should literally be like you can't possibly do anymore. As long as you can do it safely. But that's important.
I hate working out. It reminds me. Well, it reminds me of PE and it makes me feel less than. And it makes, and like, I'm just being honest here. Like, I will say I have been working out more in the past few weeks because I know it makes me feel better after, because I much prefer that feeling of like soreness. And sure, I like joke about growing tits, but I also want to take care of my body. My 97-year-old grandfather tells me he wishes he had taken better care of himself. He wishes he had stretched every single day.
Yeah.
And he's been telling me that for enough years that I'm finally like taking better care of myself. But every time I go to a gym or do a workout and I feel like, okay, I'm doing it to my capacity, it makes me feel like I am a weak piece of shit, and I don't like that feeling. I don't know how to get around it.
So I will say that the flip side of that coin is just like try to find the pleasure and the satisfaction of like when you push yourself to that point. And I don't mean to sound like overly bro-y here by any means, but
go like, for it.
When you push yourself to that point where it's just like to the point where your body can physically not even, you're trying and it just won't happen. I don't know. There's something satisfying. It's like, it's so rare that we like push ourselves to that point in anything in life. And so you can sort of pat yourself on the back being like, I just like tried really hard at doing something. And
I do think you're onto something. I think that there needs to be, it's like that people talk about the runner's high. They talk about like, I don't want to run, but then of course I'm so pissed because after I ran, I actually did feel better. And it's like, I think I honestly need to still tap into that threshold of joy that derives from that pain, because it's, you know, it's like, I think we're living in a time where everybody is so trying to just like neutralize pain. We're scrolling online so we don't have to worry about our own thoughts. Yeah. We are, you know, doing whatever we can just to like live comfortable existences. But I think that you're right. Like pushing ourselves is an important part of growing. And it is something that I think really actually connects to the show Boots, which I want to get into for a sec, because I want to tell you that it is a big, big, big deal for someone like you to have grown up, of course, with these desires to act, to go to college to study it. That's already something hard to do, to pursue your dreams. it's even harder to get cast in a show that is not only so well done, but has such an incredible message and is hitting so many people. Let's call a spade a spade. The show is killing it on Netflix. It's been in the top 10 since it's premiered. And for people who don't know, it stars Miles Heiser. It's inspired by The Pink Marine by Greg Cope White. And it takes place in 1990 before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was passed, when basically being gay in the military was fully illegal, criminalized. Yeah. You play the character Hicks, who is described as a nut job. Before we get into sort of the deeper meanings of the show, I've asked you about your queeniest quality. Do you have any nutty qualities? Anything insane about you, Angus?
Insane. I mean, I feel like, to be honest, like my most insane qualities were probably from my hardcore drug addict era, which ended 3 years ago. But I do feel like that is a big wealth of experience to tap into as far as like absolutely insane, illogical, nutty behavior.
Yeah, no, this is a very personal question.
Oh,
and
please.
I'm curious, though, as someone who is now sober and mazel tov on 3 years, that is huge. Are you comfortable telling me, like, as an addict, was there a certain either feeling or place of pain that you felt that was a root of your using? Does it connect to your queerness at all? I'm just curious because we all have so many demons. And I'm curious if that played a role in your using and getting sober.
Thankfully, it felt very separate from my identity and my queerness. Like it took me a little bit, but since college, I would say I'd really loved myself. And I thank whoever is the power that be that I am gay every day. Like you could not pay me enough money to be straight. Like, I swear that's how I feel. But I will say, like, for me, the big thing that, well, first of all, I come from a family of addicts and they're sober now. So it's like, everything's all good, but my childhood was kind of crazy. And I always tried to be like the golden boy, you know, non-addict when I was younger. So I always felt like I had a fairly normal relationship to drugs and alcohol. And then it wasn't until COVID where it changed for me, because my relationship to where I did drugs and how frequently I did it, just like it became so much more casual. When I feel like before that, it used to be a sort of a location-based activity. And then post-COVID, it was just like a whenever I felt like it-based activity.
So it went from social to like just daily.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it just snowballed from there and then hit the point where when I realized it wasn't fun anymore, but I still didn't stop, I was like, wow, it finally came for me in the end, you know.
They got me, gal.
It were. Truly, they got me, gal. Well, me alone in my bedroom saying they got me, gal, as I'm railing lines of ketamine.
Covered in Cheeto puff powder. No, listen, I think it's really relatable that COVID really got us all, gal. And I think that it takes a lot of strength to be like, you know, this might not be the healthiest day today. Hey, gay ass girlies, I just read a romance horror book that I think you'd be absolutely obsessed with. Listen to this. It's called House of Rain by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And at first I was nervous it would be too scary, but y'all, it's scary and horny. And as a newly self-identified slut, I feel seen. Also, it takes place on a remote island in the Pacific Northwest, which I think the Pacific Northwest canonically has the hottest people. So if that doesn't make you squirt, babe, I don't know what will. Also, the book has so many gay-ass themes. I'm talking family drama, there's rumors, manipulation, and again, it's horny as hell. Now, the writing is also so good that it moves real fast and there's kink in it, and you will not be able to put this down. Harley LaRue is a queer writer who gets it. You can find House of Rain by Harley LaRue wherever books are sold, in print and an ebook. The gorgeous deluxe hardcover first printing is only available for a limited time, so grab yours before they are gone, babe. I know it's a very sensitive subject, but I myself had to question my relationship to smoking weed in the past year. And I don't consider myself to be an addict. I do consider myself, though, to be someone that struggles with balance and also just like emotional covering emotional escapism. If I'm not careful, I think it's like I can, you know, use weed to like not feel, and that's where I get in trouble. Totally. And so I think, and I think a lot of it was COVID of being like, you know, you have nothing but time, and you can feel. I mean, it's, that's why they fucking say, you know, drugs. That's why there's so much fear based around drugs, is because they really can envelop you and then again get your gal. but there's a beauty to you using your sobriety and informing that into how you work as an actor. And I just can't imagine what it was like shooting a show like Boots with such a ensemble of actors. And again, for anybody who hasn't watched it yet, it's like all of these, yes, beautiful men, but it's also you going through these crazy physical challenges. And I can only imagine the long shoot days. I can only imagine how long, out of curiosity, how long were you shooting?
So we shot over the course of two separate summers because we were split up by the strike. So we started, I can't remember the year. We started one summer, the strike happened, we went on a hiatus, and then we waited until the following summer to come back and finish the show. So it was truly, I mean, the time we spent shooting aside, it's just been such a long journey. And a lot of us were really quaking in our boots, sorry to say it, about like possibly getting, you know, just getting canceled, like after we finished the first three episodes. And then
that
thankfully
must have been hell.
It was complete hell, because like, you know, the producers and the like the powers that be above the cast and the crew, like no one's really sharing information with you as it comes. So you're all pretty like in the dark as to what decisions are being made. And so we all really had to, you know, we found refuge in the group chat frequently, and we were like spiraling together and supporting each other. And thankfully we got to come back and finish it. And, but
that must have felt crazy to go back to set. Crazy. Since I do like to learn about the mechanics of shooting something like this, were you shooting it out of sequence where there were parts from like maybe the last few episodes that you're shooting in that first summer? Or because did that feel like a mind fuck that you were then shooting after a year off almost, and then going back to shoot things that were earlier in the season? Like, how did that feel?
So thankfully most of us had like a pretty chronological experience with what we were shooting. The one thing, Miles had to do some of the scenes in the final episode, I think it was, when he first started that first. So, which is really kind of gaggy, because when I look at those scenes in the last episode, those are some of my favorite scenes. And you would never think, like, you know, he basically shot those on week one being like, how did we get here? I guess we'll figure out.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I wasn't really acquainted with Miles' work until Boots. I know he's been a part of like huge things. What, 13 Reasons Why? He's been a part
Parenthood.
Of like, yeah, Parenthood. He's like done these big, big things. But I really just fell in love with him from watching Boots. And it's, you've talked about this too in some of your interviews and some of your writing. I think it's really, really special to watch queer people play queer roles. And I think that, again, this fucking masculinity of this show has like really hit me in a place that, I mean, there's a storyline about twins that really got to me. I have a twin brother who was my bully growing up, and we're really great now. But I mean, there's just, this show really, really strikes me, because I just think that gay people growing up, if we're not lucky in growing up either like in a very liberal or forward-thinking place, we can be stuck in a place that feels like fucking boot camp. And it's men screaming at you and telling you that you're a fucking pussy, faggot, bitch.
Yeah.
And it is so crazy to watch you as a cast go through that as, of course, actors, but also just think about how much it was, how much you were bonding off screen. Were you so tired during shooting that you would not be able to like kiki after you wrapped the day, or were you able to sort of let loose, as so Lucy Duca would say?
Right. Thankfully, because we were just all there every day, which is sort of abnormal for a TV show. Normally you're like popping in to do your scenes and then leaving. Like we were all working every single day the entire time. So we all got to kiki with each other throughout the entire day that we were there. And then I just think, yeah, but by the end of the day, it's like everyone sort of was just like, okay, bedtime for me. We'll see you tomorrow bright and early. But no, we all got extremely close. It felt like sort of, you know, almost in the same way that you would bond with like a theater sort of cast in a rehearsal process, just because you're spending so much time together. And, you know, people, I'll speak for myself, like walk away from a scene being like, oh, fuck, I wish I did something different. And your friends come and they're like, no, that was great. Like, you did such a good job. You know, like moments like that, that are just like you need when you're.
That really takes me back to like doing musicals in high school and you exactly. felt invincible. Remember like opening night, you're standing yes. in a circle before.
Yes, you're opening
like,
night.
This is of the doing most like, important day. Yeah. Yeah, you're doing what? Legally Blonde.
Opening night of doing like Cherry Orchard as a 16 or as a 15 year old having no business doing.
Girl,
like, a
I wish my school. Although my school did. Shout out to my theater teacher, Amy Ellen Cano. She's an icon. We didn't do Cherry Orchard. We did do The Servant of Two Masters, a Commedia dell'arte play. But no Chekhov in my herstory. As a theater queen, I'm going to have to ask you, did you do any yeah. musicals in high school? What was Angus yeah. O'Brien belting to the rap? Wait, don't tell me. You absolutely did Footloose.
No. I did Hairspray and I was Corny Collins.
Corny Collins with the latest, greatest.
Exactly.
Hot. Of course you were Corny Collins with a yeah. little swoop-de-doo. Okay.
I had a little silver suit on and everything.
Wait, your high school did Hairspray? That's gaggy.
Yeah, it was actually kind of this like really, it was sort of a planets aligning situation where it was my senior year, I think. And I think the drama department was like, they knew all the kids that were in the choir program and like the kids who were seniors that year. And they were like, wait, I think we could actually do Hairspray this year. And it was like the cast. I'm sorry. Like, it was such a good production of Hairspray.
I believe. How was your Tracy Turnblad?
Incredible. Incredible.
Shout her out. We shout yeah. her out. Shout out Tracy.
Molly Chapman. She really killed it.
Shout out Molly Chapman, you fucking bitch. And that was said as a compliment. We love obsessed with a little musical theater throwback. Completely. Another throwback I would like to go into is your Instagram is just beautifully done. And I'm Dude. Loving watching your follower count jump because you deserve. Really one of your infamous IG dumps, you posted a photo of Miles and fellow cast member Kieran Moore showing off yeah. their jock straps on set.
Yes.
And I want to thank you so much for bringing visibility to the jock strap world. Angus. Yeah. Do jock straps make you soaking wet, or are we just sort of capturing an innocent moment?
I do like a jock strap. I sort of have phases with undergarments, if you will, where sure,
I will.
Yeah, I feel like I had a big loving jock straps phase, and now I'm kind of like. Now I hate to say it, like kind of loving a boxer moment again.
No,
like,
boxers, I think boxers are having a moment. And I think a couple years ago, I would have been mad at you.
Yeah, but same. I would have been mad at myself.
I know. But I'm married to a man who loves a boxer and I have, yeah. you know, I have to support my husband. So, why do you think boxers are coming back? I'm really curious.
I'll say two things. For me, what I like about the boxer is that I have two roommates and I like that the boxer can be like a lounging around the apartment and not feel like crazy. Like if I were watching Netflix in the living room in a jock strap, like that'd be kind of crazy. But I can do it in boxers and that's fine. But,
no, that's true. That's you know true. What I Although, mean? Are yours like how long? Are you worried about ball spillage?
I would say they're pretty tight around the thigh. So I think I'm safe in that regard.
Oh, right, because you actually have muscles and you have a strong base. I forgot.
I have big old legs and thighs and everything like that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Do you find that you... Sorry. Well, never apologize for your thighs. That's my biggest message on this podcast.
Thank you.
Do not
Thank
apologize
you.
For your fucking skull-crushing thighs. Do you never ever watch again. The videos on TikTok of, like, the people crushing watermelons with their thighs?
I'm kind of into the, like... I feel like I've seen videos of these, like, giant bodybuilding women doing stuff like that. And as, like, a watcher of anime, there's something about seeing these like giant bodybuilding women that evokes like an anime type of thing for me, which I appreciate that as a viewer. I don't know. It does.
You love strong women.
Yeah.
Bodybuilding, character or otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
What about in the show, Cameron, the character, of course, played by Miles, enlists into the Marines with his straight best friend. Mm-hmm. Do you have any straight men in your life, or do you just keep it to the gays?
So I will say my older brother is one of my best friends in the entire world. He is also a sober king. Him and I accidentally have the same sober day 10 years apart. Isn't that crazy?
I just got chills.
Yeah, it is so insane. Anyways, so there's that.
And now it's just like a universe, like it just happened that way.
Yes, yes. Really insane.
10 years apart on the same fucking day. Is your brother in the entertainment biz as well, or is he a civilian?
No, he's a civilian. He works like helping people get sober, and he helped me get sober 10 years later after he was a raging drug addict than I was, and then he helped me get sober. Isn't that amazing?
It's like, it makes me emotional. I think it's probably because I'm like, you know, partly deeply tired, but also just like deeply touched by straight gay brother relationships and the sober element. There's such a depth to that.
Yeah.
Is your brother, how much older is your brother than you?
He's 2.5 years. Yeah, 2.5 years older.
Wow.
Wait, so, one and a half. I can't remember. 1.5 years.
So like, you know, nothing.
So we're super close.
Math is hard. But like, that's so beautiful. But I want to dive into the sort of gay element of having a straight brother. Was he just also a liberal king because he similarly grew up in a forward-thinking place? What was it like sort of coming out to him? And did your relationship change and grow when it comes to that?
Yeah, so we like, growing up in LA, I just feel like I was so lucky. I almost think at a certain point it was like uncool if you were homophobic, you know, like it would just be like, why, you know, it didn't really make sense.
Let's like make that spread around the country.
Seriously.
It's uncool to be a dick. I like really want that to prevail.
And we had these like really cool lesbian surfer aunts in San Diego. So like I knew he was like obsessed with that. So I knew it was going to be fine, but he was actually the last person that I told, because I told my friends in high school, and then I told my mom. And then the way that he found out actually was because for whatever the hell reason, all of our Apple devices were like linked to the same Apple ID, and I downloaded Grindr on like my phone, and it downloaded to our mom's iPad, and I remember I was at the dentist, and I get a text from my brother, and he goes, like, I could cry just thinking about it. I get a text from my brother, who's assuming that my mom doesn't know that I'm gay, and he goes, dude, don't worry, I deleted this from mom's iPad, like, I love you, you don't have to worry, like, and I was like, oh, you're like, mom actually already knows, but thank you so much, I love you, like, but he like took that. He was like trying to protect me in that moment, you know, and it was just, it was kind of the perfect way. Connor. Yeah.
Whenever we get a chance to shout out the good ones.
Yeah, he's such a good one. He's truly such a good one.
Connor. Thank you, Connor, for reminding us that not all straight men are homophobic or
no. To that point, too, like this shooting this show was my first time since like high school, since I'd been around so many straight guys like all day, every day. And that was a like, honestly, it was a really cool experience, because I feel like when you're used to spending time pretty much exclusively with queer people, it's easy to just be like, oh, straight people suck. But
are you calling me out?
Of course not.
No, but you're very spot on. I think that I think you're spot on, because I think that Not to interrupt you, but like, I need to really look within here because I moved to LA 4 years ago from New York. I have a lot of straight friends in New York who are my family, who I would take a bullet for, who I love to the ends of the earth. But when I moved to LA, I mostly created a community of gay people.
Yeah.
And with this podcast and with just my work and my life, it's been very, very, very gay in ways that I love. However, when I do come across a straight man and he's really sweet, I'm like, oh my, like literally happened a few days ago. My dear friend Zach Noe Towers, a genius comedian, he had a party. A couple of like really cute guys were there and I was talking to them. And I was like, wait, you guys are gay, right? And they were like, no, we're straight. And I was like, I'm so sorry, first of all. Second of all, they ended up, part of the reason why I'm like so tired and my voice sounds like I've been smoking cigs is I did a show last night that was like a lovely, crazy night. But these straight guys came to see my very gay solo show. They like are the sweetest, most amazing guys. Amazing. And I think that I need to do what you do, which is get cast in a hit Netflix show, but also be around the good straight guys to sort of reinvigorate my hope.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, I think because I had a very similar thing where after I graduated from NYU, I feel like it was really important to me to carve out like a super, super gay and queer circle of friends. And I think like that's a beautiful and normal thing, and it's like very important for gay men to have like a lot of queer friends, certainly, but also I feel like I'm reaching that point in my life where I know that's all there. I love that part of my life, and it's just nice to be reminded that, like, you know, people contain multitudes and these men can be like nice and supportive and to give people the opportunity to be cool and supportive. And
well, that's really, really well said. And I think if we zoom out even further, I think it's in a way we're giving ourselves the gift of cultivating a queer community. But then when we connect with the straight men specifically, we're in a way like helping make the world a more balanced place, because we're like letting it be a two-sided thing of like, we're not going to isolate, but we're going to actually engage with maybe a group of people that used to torture us as kids, but give them a chance to add to our lives in really positive ways, much like your brother, much like your cast mates in Boots. And I think it's a really sort of like simple but spot on reminder that it is okay to take chances on people that we not normally would have thought to.
Also, like, it's so important for, I feel like the biggest, one of the most helpful things in sort of expanding your mind in regards to your relationships with people is to just have people, like, to get to know people that you might not necessarily think to. And I think it gives both people the opportunity to realize, like, you both want the same things. You both want to have a good life, hang out with your friends. You don't want to be stressed. Like, you realize the ways that you're not all that different from each other. And I think that's helpful.
And also, I think it heals maybe some of our early wounds if we just connect with people that, again, like, we wouldn't think to do anymore.
Yeah.
There is one asshole straight man that I do want to bring up.
Please.
And that's Pentagon Press Secretary Kingsley Wilson.
Oh,
the
period.
Pentagon has reacted to Boots.
Yeah.
Pentagon Press Secretary Kingsley Wilson calls Boots woke garbage.
I feel like when I saw that, I just so did not care, because I feel like the Pentagon does not speak for the people, the United States, or the world like the people do. And it's been so beautiful to just see people's responses to the show and how it moves them and the questions it provokes. And some of them are challenging questions, but I honestly haven't even cared about the whole Pentagon thing, because I see all these people having the most beautiful, like, personal connection to the show, even everything you said. And so really, like, I could care less what, I mean, it's just so random for the Pentagon to even comment on a Netflix show. Like, I'm kind of obsessed with that as a phenomenon, you know?
It's like, oh, you're so obsessed
it's
with
it's just
the
like,
Pentagon.
Why? Like, what? Like, what? Why?
Kingsley, exactly. I think if you were a smart man, you would actually encourage people to watch Boots because in a way it really places the idea of brotherhood and patriotism and hard work and coming together. But instead, they're just loving the idea of making queer people the enemy.
No,
and even
course.
Though he says in his statement, it's like, it doesn't matter if you're a guy or a girl or gay or straight. But it's like, well, yeah. Actually, then if you really mean that, then maybe you would be championing a show that is allowing us to celebrate that we are humans who contain those multitudes.
Yeah, no, our showrunner, Andy Parker, has said it so beautifully in a couple of interviews. And I've been with him when he said it, but it's basically, you know, so much of what the show does is like it asks the viewer to expand their idea of like who's allowed to be an American. And I feel like with a lot of people have a very rigid and narrow-minded perception of what that means. And mm-hmm. I think the more that you're able to expand that definition, like the more beautiful that is.
And much like you said that when you were growing up, being homophobic was considered not cool, I think we should consider it not cool to think that the only people who can be Americans are the straight white people who, you know,
yeah,
only speak English and they're, you know, only a one certain way. It's like,
yeah,
the fucking whole reason why this country is this country is because of all the fucking different people that came here. And I think that it's really, really well said. Since we only have a couple minutes left, I want to make sure to do some hard-hitting yeah. gay-ass journalist questions.
Yeah, yeah,
I've come through more of your Instagram to find photos of you in a pup mask.
Oh, Angus, my God, yes.
Are you living the pup life? Are you a good boy?
I'm a very good boy, I would say. It's a part of my nature. It's a part of my personality. I also feel like, weirdly, like, kink stuff, I feel like I'm sort of the school of thought that the more expanded your life experiences are, like, the better actor you can be. And kink is such a... Kink is like an exercise in expanding your imagination in a lot of ways. And I think it's really fun and cool. And I've had people be like, are you going to take those pictures down? And I was like, why? I think it's cool. Like, I'm.
Yes. Let your freak flag fly, Angus. I'm so glad that you do.
Also, people, this is sort of my, maybe this is just what I tell myself so I can sleep at night. I don't think in today's day and age, people are as interested in working with a cookie cutter presentation of an actor, of what an actor thinks they're supposed to act like or be like on social media. I think people want to work with people who they think are interesting and have their own unique things that they like and are into.
And so, points of view and their own confidence yeah. to say how they feel. I mean, that's 100% more interesting than just like, I am a pretty person
yeah.
who did a Pepsi commercial.
Yeah, which
no,
I would
I'm
love
a fucking
to get that Pepsi
freak.
Check. But
yeah, we want the Pepsi check, but we also want the pup hood.
Oh, of course. No, when I saw that, like, I haven't seen it yet, but that movie with Alexander Skarsgård and...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just, like, obsessed that this is, like, being... You know, people are loving it. Like, people are so here for the...
Listen,
for the
at the
kink.
End of the day, we're all freaks yeah. deep down, and we just go about different ways of expressing that. And yeah. whether it's with a pup hood or a secret vibrator in your boy pussy that someone's controlling from...
How did you know?
Is your boyfriend Chris a pup as well?
Yeah, I feel like I feel like we're both sort of casual pups, I would say.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. Yeah. You, by the way, you guys are such a hot couple, and I want to make sure that that is said.
Thank you.
Before my final question, how did you and Chris meet? You guys have been together now for a few years. What's the deets?
I feel like a lot of the... I didn't really know this until I met him, but a lot of the gays who live in Philadelphia, that's where he lives, come to New York to sort of like... go out and go to parties or whatever. And we met because he was here going to a party, and I think it was like Scruff or something, or the Scruff to Instagram pipeline. And then I was like, do you want to hang out, et cetera, et cetera.
And the rest is herstory. Are you currently living in New York?
Yeah, New York.
Okay, shout out. Well, yeah. I have to say, Angus, this has been a treat. I knew it would be amazing to talk to you about Boots, a show that really has sort of now lived in my brain in these horny, meaningful ways. Yes. But you're so amazingly open about all these other parts of your life, and you are exactly what this Gay Ass podcast stands for. And I just want to thank you for coming here, being so open, so funny, so sexy, so kind. We're shouting at the straight men, we're shouting at your brother, we're shouting at your mom, we're shouting out the show. But besides that, will you shout out your Instagram account to let us know where to follow those beautiful dumps and anything else you would like for us to know?
Yeah, my Instagram is just my first and last name, Angus O'Brien _. That's really it. Nothing much beyond that. I'm off Twitter, thank God, and I'm just living my best life.
And you deserve, everybody, go follow Angus, go watch Boots. I'm very grateful to you, to my dear friends at Netflix and at Sony. I want to shout out my friend Nick, who also helped make this happen, Rowan. And you, Angus O'Brien, keep on fighting the good fight. And one day I will see you pup mask on at a rave in New York City.
Yes, exactly. No, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. And it's just, I obviously, I'm obsessed. I love talking with you, talking with a fellow gay, and I'm so glad we got to do this.
Same. Go Violets.
Oh my god, wow.
Thank you so much for joining me on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and thank you to Angus for being truly a gag of a guest. Just so hot, so funny, so open. Please go to Substack to watch the bonus episode this week where I talk about the Inside Out Dad costume cancellation and other horny salacious tales at substack.com/@EricWills, linked in the description. And thank you all for all the sweet messages. I know that I had a lot of trolling, but a lot of really, really kind flirty messages from you all. And it really made me not end it all. I love you so much. I'll see you next week. Stay gay. Bye. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and follow the Instagram at Gay Ass Podcast. For more gay assery, the real girlies are over on Substack, where you get bonus episodes every single week and live chats with me and other gay ass guests. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.